This is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This TNT open forum is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. The SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by KB8ZGL. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for our digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your moderators for this session are KJ4WKD, and my name is Jim. I'm located in Greensboro, North Carolina, and N1SUZ, Suzanne, who is located in Danbury, Connecticut. Let me go ahead and introduce tonight's presentation by saying that we all know that the United States is a very special place to live. It always has been. And every part of this country, every city, and every region has its own unique flavor and quality. But there is no other part of this country, and I say this with unabashed prejudice, no other part is more special, any more special at all, than are more unique than the American South. Tonight we'll be exploring all things Southern. That's the what we're calling our presentation tonight, and that will be a lot of things, and we'll cover a lot of things tonight, hopefully. And we're doing that as a way to shine a bright spotlight on all the special things that are the South, and of course the South is a state of mind as well as a place. And incidentally, one of the reasons that we've chose this topic, the South happens to be where a very large percentage of our membership, our South Cars membership, calls home. And maybe that's why we call it South Cars. That's part of it. We pulled together a lot of facts tonight and trivia to share with you. But it's our real intention tonight to have all of you listening and participating join in the conversation and add your thoughts and comments about the special place that everyone loves so much. So, and it will not be, really will not be a good experience for us unless you guys come aboard and share what you know about the South, what you like about the South, and even if you like, what you dislike about the South. That's okay, too. But in the process, we'll all learn a few new things about the South. And we might even interest some of the our northern members who are with us tonight. We've got a lot on our roster, and I know there's some here tonight. As a matter of fact, one of our very special northerners is going to ride along with me tonight. That would be Suzanne, N1SUZ. And she did a lot of research, as she always does, for tonight's program, and has a lot to share with us. Even from way up there in New England, which is, by the way, is another unique and beloved part of our country. And maybe we'll do one of our nets about New England, because that is rich in heritage. But so with that, why don't you come aboard now, Susie, and say hello, share a few things that you might have learned about the South recently in your research, or what you already knew. So. N1SUZ, KJ4WKD.
Well, good evening, Jim, and everyone on the net tonight. Thanks, Jim, for inviting me along to All Things Southern. You know, I may be a Yankee girl, but I have spent time in the South. I actually worked a while in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and enjoyed the Southern hospitality, along with grits for breakfast and scrapple. But, in all fairness, there was a lot more I needed to learn about the South to actually join in tonight's conversation. And someone actually sent me some Southern pecan peach preserves as part of my research, which I promptly smothered on a bagel.
WKD.
WKD, Jim, go right ahead.
I don't mean to interrupt, Susie. It's KJ4WKD here, but did I hear you say you've got these Southern peach and pecan preserves and you smothered those onto a bagel? A bagel? You put cream cheese and smoked whitefish on a bagel, Suzanne. Preserves, especially Southern pecan and peach preserves, would only go on a biscuit, preferably a buttermilk biscuit, and preferably made by your mother or your grandmother. That's really the only way to do it. It doesn't. No, not a bagel. No bagels. I'm sorry. I'll pull it back together, Susie. I'll send it back to you. KJ4WKD, back to N1SUZ.
Well, this is N1SUZ. Well, Jim, in New England, in Yankee territory, we have bagels. And maybe it's just because I'm not Southern enough yet, but maybe if you could send me a recipe for buttermilk biscuits, I'll save some of my pecan peach preserves to enjoy the proper Southern way. And let me send it back to you. This is N1SUZ.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Garden Six, Victor.
I'm sorry, Jim, but I just have to stick up for Suzanne. And hi, Susie. You know, some of us with strange walks of life enjoy the heck out of cutting a bagel in half and putting peanut butter and mayonnaise on it, Jim, KY6V, and forget the fish.
Hey, my Charlie Bravo.
George, you have your turn before I go ahead. I'd better back off before I get in trouble with everybody. I think I'm already in trouble in Connecticut. So, George, maybe you're going to stand up for me, or maybe you're going to stand up for Susie as well. But, George, come aboard, sir.
Well, I'm sure glad y'all straightened that out there on the biscuit there. For a minute, I thought you was talking about a hunting dog, and I'm sitting here trying to wonder, why would you put something like that on the dog? KW4MO, Charlie Bravo.
Well, thank you, George. Appreciate that. And I'm glad you're here. I saw your link earlier, but I hope you'll participate as much as possible tonight, because you're going to really add some color, I know, to the program tonight. And Gordon, I like bagels. I really do. I'm kidding about that, and Susie knows I'm kidding. But I don't know about peanut butter. That's fine. I don't know about mixing mayonnaise and peanut butter. Now, I've mashed up bananas, but don't know about those about mayonnaise. It well, probably work. Maybe I'll even give that a try. Okay, we can move along, and let's see, what is next? I want to relate this to ham radio just a bit, and talk about some dry statistics about the hams in the South. So I'll do that. Let me drop it a second and get some statistics for you. Okay, I'm back. And a lot of people might know or might not know that the 4 region has more hams than any other of the other 9 regions in the country compared to the others. It's the third largest with, let's see, what is, number one. The largest, of course, is the 7. That's out in the west or northwest, I believe, and then 5, which includes Texas and all that area, and the 4 region is number 3, and we're talking about landmass area, but we do have a pretty large population here, but we have 146,117 hams licensed in the 4 region, and if you go ahead and throw in Louisiana and Mississippi, you come up with another 12,000 and make it 158 for the South. And I didn't include Texas. There's controversy about Texas and Arkansas, but many times they're included in the southern states or the South proper. And if somebody would like to talk about what is the South and who is in the South and who isn't, whether it's the 11 Confederate states or if it's and you know, some people don't include Florida. But Florida's as far south as you can get. I tend to include Florida just for comparison with the number of hams here. 727,000 in the United States. A lot, three-quarters of a million about, I guess. That's in the, not including the possessions. That's just the estates. so, and not including the possessions, which, and I'm not sure which census this is, but 279 million in the country, and that's that would be average countrywide, the United States wide, 0.26, a little over a quarter of 1% are licensed hams, and in the four region and the five region, it's 0.25, one quarter of 1%. So right on the national average, but we have the most licensed hams of any other part of the country. And with that, let me open it for questions or other comments from anyone at this time. We'll be opening the floor periodically after each topic that we have scheduled. So let me do that right now. Anyone who wants to come aboard with questions or comments, I saw Sarah out there, and I'm glad to have George here. So anyone, the floor is open for comments and questions about all things Southern. KJ4WKD.
CQK.
6 Victor.
Okay, and that recognizes Rob, I believe, CQK, and Gordon, 6 Victor again. Rob, you were first. Go ahead, sir.
I don't know who to address this to, but anybody out there can answer the question for me. Maybe Kathy can answer it, being that she's an English teacher and all that. The question is, how did the South get the dialect that they have, you know, like they have their very distinct way of saying things compared to us Northern folk. I'm just wondering, how did they ever obtain such a unique and colorful dialect that they have? Over.
Well, thank you, Rob. We tend to think that you guys in the North have a unique and accent that's you really need to learn to speak differently. But I guess that's a matter of perception, but I'm kidding you too. But there's a big European contingent or immigrant contingent going way back here, of course, and I think mostly that it's European. I don't know. I really don't know how the dialect developed. A lot of the pronunciations, that sort of thing. Maybe there was not as widespread education, formal education in the South at one time. And also, I think that maybe there's an influence from the French. And we have parts of Louisiana and even Charleston, South Carolina, around that area where folks once spoke French, and there's still a lot of French overtones in the dialect in those areas. But Gordon has a comment coming up next. Maybe he's a wealth of knowledge. He probably knows the answer, but if he doesn't, he can give us his comment or question. That's all I know, Rob, and maybe as we go forward, someone else will know. And Kathy's out there. She's aboard tonight, so hopefully she has some information. But next would be Gordon, KY6V. Over to you, sir. This is KJ4WKD.
Okay, thanks again, Jim, and good evening to you, Rob. Gordon, KY6V here. No, I have no direct answer on that. I'll bet you Kathy does. You know, I think that's part of her teacher training. I would guess that it's a cultural thing in the sector that you're in. But I'll let her comment if she has time to do so, Jim. The only comment that I wanted to make aside from that was the population of the fours in the grand making of the overall scheme, ham-related calls. Before day one, with our digital VOIP operation, when we were going into our PR stage, we had a mass program of sending an individual email to every Echolink registered station east of the Mississippi. Okay, and we did it by states. This was a big program. And we would take Florida, and we'd make a list of everybody that was registered as an Echolink station, be it a repeater, a link, a single user, so on and so forth, and the conference servers. And we would send out an invitation. Florida, out of the entire eastern border, east of the Mississippi, was hands down on Echolink participation. I don't recall how it winded down from there, but the fours were predominant throughout the whole parade. So I'm just trying to substantiate what you're saying there, Jim. KY6V, back to net.
Thanks again, G. I knew you'd have some information on that, the history, and of course the history of South Cars. That's fascinating too. I'd like to hear more about that, and I've heard you tell part of that story at one time about how you did that. But I have in front of me, and if I can scroll it, I can tell you that Florida has 41,000 hams out of a population that appears to be 159. I'm sorry. Florida has a population of 15 million, almost 16 million, and they have 41,009, almost 42,000 hams. For again, they have a percentage of hams to the population of 0.26%. So very similar, but a lot of hams in Florida. I noticed that when I was looking at this earlier. So with that, let me thank you, Gordon, and thank you, Rob. Maybe we'll get an answer before the evening's over. Anyone who wants to come aboard with comments or questions, we're talking about all things Southern on the South Cars VOIP TNT Open Forum tonight.
Sierra United November.
There she is. Come aboard, Miss Sunshine.
Well, thank you, Jim. Thank you, Suzanne. And thank you, everyone that's talked this evening. But as far as the dialect of Floridians, I am not a Floridian. And a lot of my students they wonder where I come from. They say I don't speak like Floridians. I have different language. I say different things. I come from the state of Michigan. And one instance is I think I say pop instead of soda. So they know I'm not from the state. But as far as CQK, everyone down in Florida is not probably an original Floridian. So they're probably from another state. Gordon is from Hawaii and California. And George, he's from Key West, and he's from Florida. So maybe he can talk about that. But I'm from the state of Michigan. So as far as the dialect, all of us have different dialects. We talk differently. And so that's about all I can say about the way we talk in Florida. CQK, we all talk differently because we're all from different areas. I'll turn it back to you, Jim, and thanks so much for doing this net this evening. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November.
Well, thank you, Kathy. I'm glad you're there, and I'm glad you're able to be there. And the storm didn't wipe you out. I'm sure it would hurt you, but it's wouldn't want you. Your area to be damaged or those things, and hopefully it won't be. And thank you for the information. And by the way, depending on where you're, what part of the country you're from, there's different northern accents and there are different southern accents. I can recognize Texas in a heartbeat, and sometimes I can pick up Georgia. The difference in and there's a lot of different accents and not necessarily dialects. Right here in North Carolina, if you go east, you get something different. And I mentioned earlier, if you go to the coastal South Carolina, you get something totally different. And I know that New England, such as, for example, a good example is Massachusetts. They have a very unique accent and the way they are pronounced words. And if you go over to Indiana, which is not in the South, but it sounds southern to me, and then the Midwest in general, a lot of idiosyncrasies there that you can pick up in the accent. Now, that's a fascinating subject in itself. The only one, I guess, is the West Coast, California. I guess it sounds pretty pretty nondescript to me. But most parts of the country, you can pick them up. So with that, thanks, everyone. Let's move along, and there will be plenty of opportunities as we move along to open the floor for more comments and questions. We're having a good time so far. And if Suzanne is still speaking to me, it's her turn, I believe, again, and she's going to tell us something other than dry statistics and some good stuff. I know what's coming next, so I know it's really good stuff that she has prepared for us. So, M1SUC, Suzanne, KJ4WKD, over to you.
Well, thank you, Jim. This is N1SUZ. Our next topic we're going to talk about is Southern cuisine. I'm almost afraid to talk about what I learned about Southern cuisine after the peach pecan preserve incident. And by the way, Gordon, thanks for coming to my defense. But this Yankee girl will share what I found out, and hopefully everyone will come aboard afterwards and add a little bit of comment to what they know about Southern cuisine. With that said, the cuisine of the South is historically the region south of the Mason-Dixon line. There are a lot of influences sprinkled in Southern cuisine, too. African-American, Scottish, Irish, French, Native American, English, Spanish, and most notably are Creole and Cajun dishes. Native Americans served as influencing Southern cuisine right from the start. The immigrants could not have survived without instruction and the assistance of the Native Americans. From their culture, they gave Southern cuisine their first main staple, corn. From corn came cornbread and grits, and even whiskey and moonshine. Europeans introduced the concept of keeping livestock, and Southerners kept hogs and cattle. And no part of the livestock was wasted, which gave one Southern tradition dish called chitterlings or chitlins, which is fried or boiled small intestines of hogs. Southerners soon realized, though, how good the soil was and started to cultivate their land. Some of the foods unique to the South are okra, which I have some great recipes for but never find up here in Yankee country, Vidalia onions, which are my favorite onions, and thank goodness they know enough to supply them here. Then we have collard greens, figs, butter beans, pecans, peaches, and pralines, which is a specialty of New Orleans. Some other foods associated with the South are mint juleps, pecan pie, fried chicken, buttermilk biscuits. I think I've heard something about that tonight. Cornbread, sweet tea, and shoe fly pie. Not to mention Goo Goo Clusters, something I enjoyed in Tennessee, and moon pies. Let's also not forget key lime pie, which is a specialty of the Florida Keys. And maybe George can add something to that later. And, Jim, I understand peanuts don't grow on trees, but pecans do. Maybe you can enlighten me and the rest of us on that one. And with that, I'm sending it back to you. This is N1SUZ to KJ4WKD.
Thanks, Susie. I pretty appreciate you still being there. And pecans, most of the, California just does everything. So I know California has pecans and probably more than we do. I know they have more peaches than South Carolina and Georgia together. But I'm not going to talk about California, whether Gordon's here or not. But pecans, yeah, they grow on trees. They certainly do. They're nuts, and they come in, they're on the tree in a husk, I would call it, like a seed pod or whatever. And at the end of the season, that pod will tend to split. It will dry out. It's green to begin with, then it turns, it darkens. And usually for a casual pecan gatherer, rather than there, and really are there pecan farms around too, around here and especially in Georgia. But casual gatherers who have pecan trees in their yard or just nearby will just go out there and look on the ground, and you can find the pecans just all over. When I see a pecan tree, I fill my pockets full, and you see those husks laying around. Now you have to be really quick. You have to get up early, because the squirrels are going to get to them before you do. So I'm not sure, but I guess, I don't know what they do about squirrels and the pecan farms, but it isn't quite harvest time for the pecans yet. I looked for them when I was in South Carolina because there are roadside markets that sell those along with peaches. And I didn't find any yet, but next time, that's a good place to get fresh pecans. And let me know anyone who'd like some, and we'll try to get some shipments out. So with that, hope that answers your question, Susie. By the way, you mentioned pralines. That is a type of candy, I guess. It's similar to peanut brittle, but the ingredient, other than the hard sugar candy that it's made from, it's fairly thin, thinner than peanut brittle usually, is pecans. And not only New Orleans, but Savannah, Georgia is another place where you find great pralines. So, yeah, now at this time, we'll open it up for any comments or questions from the floor about Southern cuisine.
Lima, Charlie Bravo.
And 6 Victor.
Anyone else?
OVI.
Okay, we have 3. Thank you, guys. George, you're first. Lima, Charlie, Bravo. Take the microphone, George, and stir stuff a little bit, sir.
Well, sir, I think I've told you I spent a day or two up in the Carolinas. That's North Carolina and South Carolina. Now, a whole lot of peanuts or goobers growing in South Carolina, and quite a few different beans there. You got them old speckled butter beans and white half runners, a lot of lima beans is grows right there. You know, nearly all everybody that has a little garden has to have them some lima beans or butter beans. And I noticed when I lived up in North Carolina, we grew what we call October beans. And also in North Carolina, there's a lot of walnut trees that grows pretty good there. You know, we used to collect a bunch of them there and just put them out there on the gravel road and let the cars ride over the top of them. You know, that old husk, it's hard to get off, you know. And besides that, it sure stain your fingers up, too. You know, that old juice coming off of them turn your old fingers yellowish brown looking, you know. And just to add a few things there, and, you know, most people in those parts of the country, like you said earlier, they grew up, nothing was wasted there. They used everything they came in contact, with the hogs or the deers or the cows, whatever they could feed the family, you know, that's what they did there. And, oh, great day. I can go on, but this more or less, can't forget old hoe cake. Used to love to you get up in the morning, mix your old batter up. It's just like a big old cake of bread, you know, in a skillet, you know, put it or cook. Well, some folks cook it in the oven, some people cook it on top of the stove there. And that's where also I learned when they talk about bulldozers, they call them bullnosers. KW4, leave my Charlie Bubble, and we might come up with something else later.
Yeah, thanks, George. I knew you'd come up with a lot, and that's great. I knew about just about everything you talked about. Now, those hoe cakes, we call them drop biscuits, and you're talking about black walnuts. I don't know if they're unique or to the south. They're probably other places, but yeah, they're really hard to crack, and it might take a bulldozer to crack one of those on a gravel road. And they do stain your fingers, but they're really good if you go to the trouble to get into one of them, or a lot of them. My grandmother used to make some wonderful walnut cakes of those things, and just really delicious. But they are tough to deal with, and you're absolutely right about those. And I've grown a lot of beans in my garden, so yeah, all those beans and peas, and mostly in my case, green beans, or what we call around here, string beans. So with that, George, we'll break with you, but please come back. Please come back anytime, because I know you're I won't say full of it. You're full of information, sir. So with that, let's go over to Gordon, KY6D, and see what Mr. Six Victor has to add for us.
Thank you, Jim. Hello, George. I don't think half of those things that you've mentioned I've ever partaked in. But appreciate the comments. Gordon here, KY6V. I just want to say something about Susie's intro here, Jim. She mentioned shoe fly pie. And that really got my ears up because I think Susie knows, and maybe you do too, Jim, that my family and myself are very much into music. And there was a great song that came down the pike. You know, we entertain all genres of music from classical to you name it. And Shoe Fly Pie and Apple Pan Dowdy makes your eyes light up and your stomach say howdy. Thank you for that, Suzanne. And you know, with every good cuisine, you need to have some liquid kind of beverage that goes along with it, in my humble opinion. The Southerners sort of get into this Southern comfort, which to me, you know, it's a fruit, a spice, and whiskey liqueur. Being a Scotchman, a Scotch intaker, I really never got used to that. A lot of people say, okay, there's got to be red wine with the meat and white wine with the fish, and on goes the story. What do we do down here in the South, Jim? Do we put a little moonshine in there or what? KY6V, over.
I think that would be moonshine, Gordon, if we're in the South. And as to the wines, we make our own muscadine wine and peach wine, whatever fruit or berry that we might have. We got the wine in the cellar or in the you know, in the closet, away from out of sight when the preacher comes, of course. But yeah, we make our own. It can be red, usually red, I would say. Because of the fruits we might use, or some white with a peach or whatever. But we don't want any store-bought stuff. We make our own everything, whether it's the hard stuff or the sipping wine. You got to make it yourself. Susie mentioned that, speaking of beverages, the moon pies. Well, you got to wash that down with RC Cola. You know, moon pie is not the same without an RC. So with that, thank you, sir. We're going to talk about some of those topics, maybe, hopefully, especially music. I'm not sure I've heard that tune, but maybe you can hum a few bars later. Not on the air, of course. With that, OVI, I believe, is coming through one of our repeaters. Come aboard and give us a call and let us know what you have to say, and join the reg queue this evening, sir.
Certainly. But I want to put something in the mix here, too. This is Kilo Delta 4, Oscar Vic India. What I was going to put into the mix here is, don't forget your rhubarb pie. Those rhubarbs are in the end season. You buy a couple of them, Winn-Dixie, whatever store you want to buy them at, Food Fair or what. Buy a couple of those and cook them up a little bit. Make them very nice and sweet. Add a little bit of sugar to those and cook them up and get them ready. Once you get that all ready, get the mixer done right, and you think you got it right, then you get the old pie pan out and put some nice real thin crust on there and run all that stuff on top of that. And on top of that, put a little crusty crust on top of that. Smooth it out a little bit and make it look too pretty. And you put it in the stove and cook it a little bit, an overcooker. And it'll make a nice little dessert for you. And top it off with some tequila. If you have some tequila with a little bug in there, you're set to go. KD4 Oscar Victor India.
KD4 Oscar Victor India. Thank you. Rhubarb pie. I don't know if I've had rhubarb pie. I was thinking when you were talking about that, and I'm not sure I'm correct, but I'm thinking of Garrison Keeler on Prairie Home Companion, and he's in Minnesota. And it's rhubarb pie, somebody correct me, is another kind of pie that he's always discussing having in Minnesota. And I'm trying to remember the Lake Wobegon. Lake Wobegon's that's always rhubarb, I believe, rhubarb pie. So with that, I think I'll step a little bit out of sequence here, because Susie is not getting her fair shake tonight, and she has a very good topic. Susie, let me send it back to you. Take your next topic, and other things I might have, I'll fill in with later. So KJ4WKD over to N1SUZ, Susie.
Well, thank you, Jim. This is N1SUZ, and I'm not feeling left out at all. This has been a lot of fun, and I'm sitting back listening. And what we thought we'd talk about next, which is a natural progression, is music. And the South is well known for a lot of different types of music. And by the way, that Shoe Fly Pie song that you talked about, Gordon, the First Lady of Song actually recorded a version of that, Ella Fitzgerald. But besides that, the South is well known for country music, but it's also where jazz music got its start. In 1899, Scott Joplin's Maple Leaf Rag became a hit, and New Orleans became known as the capital of jazz. From jazz, we also have Dixieland, but there are other forms of music, too. There's mountain music, where the people in the mountains had no recordings, no radios, and they just decided to make their own music in their very little free time. They carved their instruments out of local hardwoods, such as redwood, and go from there. There's also hillbilly music, which originally was heard at barn raisings, quilt parties, fiddle conventions, and all that later became what we know as country music. Places to keep in mind when we think of Southern music are Nashville, Tennessee, home of the Grand Ole Opry, and I actually visited that myself. And the country music industry is big in Nashville. But you also have Memphis, Tennessee, home of the country music legends such as Jerry Lee Lewis, Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, Ray Orbison, and we can't forget Elvis. You also have New Orleans, home of ragtime and Dixieland, and the birthplace of jazz as well. So that about does it with what I found out about music. Would anyone like to share what their favorite Southern music is? I'd ask you to come aboard now and tell us what your favorite Southern music is.
Six Victor.
Very good, Gordon. Come on aboard, Six Victor, and let us know.
All right. Thank you, Mademoiselle. KY6V here. Well, everything you mentioned are favorites of mine. I love jazz. I love Dixie. I love bluegrass. But one that you didn't mention, and it came out of the South, and it came out of New Orleans just like the Jazz Boys did. You know, Satchmo, Louis Armstrong on his trumpet, and so on and so forth, was the blues. And the blues, Susie, is one of my favorite genres. Over.
Well, there you go. That's exactly what I needed you for, and everybody on here, to come aboard and give us some more insight here. Yeah, blues. That was a big hit down there as well, and we've gotten some amazing artists from there. And the South really welcomed the blues artists into their hearts. So come on aboard back, Gordon Six Victor, and tell us what your favorite jazz blues are.
Oh, I don't know where to start. I have probably a repertoire of blues of a couple of hundred pieces that I just absolutely love to play. You know, I have to tell you a story maybe a little off color here or a little off of stance. My youngest son, who has now graduated from college and graduated in music, has his own band, and he's doing exceptionally well. And it's a rock band. He grew up with me, and I instill the blues and the jazz in him, and he plays a lot of jazz, and he plays a lot of blues. He plays a lot of things. But right now, he's focused on rock, and it's not hard rock. It's a soft rock type band. And he just seems to be booked weekend after weekend after weekend. But I sit down with him on when the occasion presents itself, Susie, and I said, "I don't like that music, bud." He says, "Why don't you like that music?" He says, "Everybody else likes it." And I says, "There's too much distortion in it." I says, you put your foot down on that distortion pedal when you're playing that guitar, and it all comes out distorted, it's muffled." And he says, "Hey, that's the way it's done." I said, "Phooey. Go ahead, Susie, KY6V, over."
I love it, Gordon. I love it. Yeah, you know, what can you do? Yeah, the blues and rock and roll, a little bit of difference there. But thanks for sharing that. Anybody else want to make any comments on music, blues, jazz, anything out there? Come on aboard.
WKD.
Hello, my Charlie Bravo. I think I might have doubled with Jim.
All right, I got you both. Let me take you first, Jim, since you got here first. And why don't you share some of what you listened to when you were growing up in the South? KJ4 WKD, come on aboard.
That question, I guess I'm a little unusual, maybe, for the South. But I listened to since I was really discovered music. Well, I had to listen to a lot of country music, of course, but it didn't stick with me too much. But I will say a comment on that. The country music of years ago, 50s, 60s, was more like the real authentic stuff. And the rockabilly we have today that I hear, I don't care for. But I was listening to jazz growing up. That's a segue really into what I wanted to say. And jazz is my music. I don't play. And I know Gordon, he's told me he plays the trumpet and the guitar very, very well. Well, others have told me he plays very, very well. And I know he does. And he probably plays some more. Maybe he'll tell us how many instruments he plays. But Gordon said something that tripped my trigger and about the distortion. And I hear a lot of rock bands. We have a little strip near here where you go where one of my favorite little grocery stores is, and they have a couple of bars that are for the college kids. And wow, you can't walk down the street, and it's all distortion. It's just way too much volume. But I do not really go for synthetics. I don't go for a lot of the electronics in music. I would rather have a jazz combo, a horn, a piano, drums, horn like a tenor sax or a trumpet, and just have those things very natural. That is the way music should be performed. And all of this amplification and distortion just does not sit well with me. So I just wanted to, one of my pet peeves, and I wanted to throw that in, Susie, and I'll throw it back to you.
Well, thanks, Jim. I agree with you with that. More of a jazz purist as opposed to this new innovations. But thanks for sharing that. And let me break with you, and let me pick up George, KW4LCB. Come on aboard, George.
Well, Sue, I remember days back as a young kid there, I used to have a radio that set in the Wonder. I used to tune it throughout, you know, getting the static in there, and got to give Texas its credit there. Old station out of Del Rio, Texas. We used to get floating in and floating out, and a couple station out of Nashville, Tennessee, and used to listen to the Grand Ole Opry and Mr. Old Ernest Tubb coming out of Texas there, and didn't hear. I did like some of that country comedy. The world famous Miss Minnie Pearl. Howdy! With that old hat on there, with that old tag on there for how much it was there, and they used to have some good comedy. Like Gordon, I think the blues is my one of my favorites. Do like harmonica music that had that in there. But seemed like it tells the story. You know, a lot of musicians, not only, you know, in all categories, you know, trying to make play different show dates and all, they had a rough road to go, you know. So I like to listen to someone who's they've walked the walk, and later on in life they can do the talk. So you know, my hat goes off to them. Don't like some of this so-called country music that they call in country today, but I could always pull me an old CD out, or old 45 record, or even a old 38. record there and listen to it.
Well, thanks very much, George. That was really great insight. And yes, you know, music to me needs to tell a story. And definitely with these blues and jazz musicians of old, that's really where they did. They told the story that their lives were from. And I really can appreciate that. And and by the way, I love Miss Minnie Pearl myself. But anybody else want to make any comments? Come on aboard.
WKD again. Well, George said a few things, and I was thinking about the blues again. Blues guitar, and I wonder if Gordon, I think he's saying he plays the blues guitar, and I want a CD, Gordon. I want to hear it. I love blues guitar. I really do. And mentioned the harmonica. That's great. And the fact that some of the jazz musicians in years gone by did have a tough life. And your country music and blues, by the way, they do tell stories, and they are about where the songwriter or the musician, in many cases, came from, their roots. But it's troubling to me that so many of the great jazz performers back in the and the best ones were prior to 1970, I think. There's some good ones coming along now. Great young lion tenor sax players, but some of the real great ones are long gone, and a majority of those were, not all, but the majority were African American. And many of those guys had to, because of it was so rough to travel and go to hotels and restaurants, traveling with a band, it was so rough in those days around the South, and well, other places too, in the North, of course, and a lot of people don't realize that, but the African Americans weren't treated very well in this country, and so many of them went to Europe, places like Amsterdam, to perform and practice their art. That's too bad that we are the birthplace of jazz and blues, and so many of them left us and recorded over in other countries. So just wanted to throw that one in, Susie. And with that, back to you, KJ4WKD.
Six, Victor.
And Charlie Bravo.
Go ahead, Gordon, and then we'll pick you up, George.
Yeah, nice comments, Jim. Thank you. KY6V here. You know, Satchmo, Susie, Louis Armstrong, I want you to think about this, and maybe we can end this on this note. Said there's good music and there's bad music. And he said, and I can see him with his trumpet in his hand and his handkerchief saying this. He says, the difference between good music and bad music is you tap your toes to good music. And Jim, in your direction, one of my favorite blues is I Have a Little Red Rooster, and he's too lazy to crow today. Go ahead, Susie, KY6V, over.
Thanks, Gordon, for sharing that. And that is the perfect quote, because definitely need to be tapping your toes. So let me break with you. And George, Lima Charlie Bravo, come on aboard.
Yeah, okay. Susie, just to me to wind this up, give you a little bit of island music, and we'd get this old a wash tub, and after it's done, wore out, put us a string in it, and go up to a stick, and lay that stick on the side, and we'd get a wash tub. We'd get an old handsaw out, and you've seen people play the saw with a little soft stick and bend it to make music, but we took it a step further, and crutched the handle up under our arms, put a bend in it, and we'd take a knife and rub it across the teeth, and also got us a set of Moroccos there, and got a little bit of island bead, and you know, come up with, played one of the old songs like Matilda or Shame and Scandal in the Family, and oh, great day. We can go on, but bring you up to a little bit of conk music there. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Well, thanks, George, for sharing that. Let me ask you before you go off on another subject. Do you still do that? Do you still go out there and play that way?
Well, My conchs are still down there in the water. Some of them's done passed on. The great Bill Butler, Coffee Butler, he used to play a horn. I think Gordon might have run into him a while back there. And there was a band called the Junkanoos. They had toured the country here playing island music, and a lot of it filtered in from the Bahamas. But like I said, I'd do anything once and twice if I like it there when the opportunity occurs to grab us all out. I got a couple of maracas sitting here. I even got a harmonica and a guitar. And, I get going on the kitchen sink whenever the mood strikes me.
Oh, well, I love it. That's great. Yeah, the harmonica is something I've always had a affinity to want to learn, and have one sitting right here, actually, in the room here with me. But that's one instrument I never thought I could actually learn that well. But I guess I'll stick with the guitar, too. But, okay, and no one mentioned Zydeco music, because that's some Cajun music. All righty, then. Let me call over to KJ4 WKD. Jim, if you're still there, come on aboard, and maybe you can wrap this up or talk about a little something else.
Okay, Susie, great job. I'm just always in awe of your research. It doesn't matter about the subject, and you're going to come up with a lot. And you came up with some things you came up with some things I didn't know about the South. So when I was trying to take things off the top of my head, so I've got a lot more things here, about the South, a lot of highlights and industry and all sorts of things going on here. But we won't hold a net too much longer tonight. And I was thinking about George again, and George is just so special for us. He's great, George. All of just great information. And I was wondering, sir, if you I won't call on you at this moment, but wondered if you ever played a washed tub bass. That sounds like it might go with those instruments that you put together. And also, on my list, we've mentioned before on another net, and maybe we talked about it offline, NASCAR. NASCAR has become a worldwide phenomenon, especially in the United States, and it all started here in really North Carolina, running moonshine. Of course, we talked about moonshine earlier, and those guys who did that and stayed a few car lengths ahead of the revenuers around the mountains and up and down, and they would get together on the weekends. They built makeshift racing tracks and started racing each other. So you had the best car and the fastest car, and then that developed into NASCAR. So NASCAR had its roots in moonshining out of the South. So that's something special to the South. And,
station, over the station.
Come aboard, sir.
I thought all this time that Daytona was the birthplace of NASCAR. Since the inception of the races that they did along the beaches. They raced along the beaches, then it came up on one of them hair turns, and then they went back on the road again. And so it went on for hours and hours, as I was told. And I am an avid race car fan. I participate in many of the functions at the racetrack here. And happy to have been there all the years, most of, gosh, 8-9 years now. And every time I go out there and I do my thing, do my job out there, I really do appreciate the entertainment, and also the ability of those race car drivers to stay in that car, in that hot car, and race around the track at average speed around 170 miles an hour or more. I think they're starting to eclipse that. That's just There were some periods where there were over 200 miles an hour around the track. But I do sure you like NASCAR. You rang my bell on that one.
Okay, thank you. I wanted to be sure you got everything in. And thank you for those nice comments. And really interesting and entertaining. And I knew there were some NASCAR fans out there, some racing fans. And thank you for coming aboard with that. And really interesting about the genesis of Daytona. And everybody knows about Daytona, of course, one of the biggest ones. And then there's Charlotte Motor Speedway. And, of course, another well-known NASCAR race and speedway would be Darlington, South Carolina. Darlington 500 was a biggie for a long time. Those tickets were very hard to get, I've heard. So with that, thank you very much, Pete. We appreciate your being with us tonight and everyone who has been with us. But with that, George, you've been patiently waiting, sir. Your turn.
Okay, Jim. We did have the base washed up there. Like I said, used to use old clothesline, old monofilament fishing line. Got a little bit rough, you know, would cut into the fingers there. But, using gloves, you just couldn't get the feel that you needed to feel. So, that was all that there. Even had a little old cowbell with a stick that used to be on the side of the cowbell. The little old clapper was taken out of it there, but if you got the rhythm and the beat in your bones, the music's got to flow, and when that feeling's flowing, them legs and them hips and all that kind of stuff, and I think once upon a time I can get down to about a foot on a limbo stick there. The best I can do is about a 3 foot there, but I can still bend that back, so what can I say? As far as a lot of your NASCAR drivers, you got their shot, driving, learning to drive the back roads of the Carolinas and Kentucky and Tennessee and Georgia, running moonshine, that was the way to make extra money, and at the time it was wartime, and funds were short, and people had to survive, and they got into making liquor. You had your makers, and you had your deliverers, and and with that, the government had a whole lot of money to sink into these big old fast cars, and these guys just started building their own engines, and a lot of times they'd even run off their own moonshine they made, to go where they had to go there, and word got out where they could make some money racing. After a while, the government used to pay people to rat each other out, and I think old Junior Johnson, he was pretty big in running liquor. I think, Lord forgive me if I'm wrong, but I think he might have, either him or some of his family, pulled some time, over there. A lot of them guys got in trouble with the law for running liquor, and they figured it's about time to get out of it, and they got into racing. I mean, that's the only other thing they knew was liquor and cars there. So Yeah, that put car racing on the road, so to speak.
Thank you, George. Great piece of history there, and you seem to know it a lot better than I do. I know the overall gist of it, but you have some details there that are that's fascinating. Yeah, and yeah, I know about those guys. Junior Johnson, yeah, he was the old guy. He was well into that, and I don't know if he got in trouble with the law, but a lot of them did, and in and out of trouble, and he turned to racing, and look what it is today, NASCAR. So thanks, George. We appreciate it. So let me open it up one more time for anyone who wants to come aboard and help us wrap it up tonight.
Six Victor, sir.
Well, I thought you might still be out there, Gordon. Come on back, Six Victor. This is KJ4, WKD.
Yeah, while you're winding down here, Jim, I don't know how far south is south, but getting back to music for just a moment, you know, and George mentioned the island music. Reggae was one of my favorites and still is. Belafonte and that group, I tell you some stories about him. He was a very distant member of our family. He had married into it years ago. But reggae had a nice beat too, Jim. And with that, I'll pass it back to you. KY6V, over.
Well, thanks again, Gordon. Yeah, I remember Harry Belafonte. Had a pretty daughter also, but D.O.D. Light, I guess that was what I remember, one of his, and yeah, his music was popular, I believe it would have been in the 60s, very popular. He made a big hit, a big splash during that period of time, and really put some island music on the map for the first, he was instrumental in doing that, so, and it's good music, it was nice music. I'm not, when I said I was a jazz purist, as a jazz fan, it doesn't mean that I only like jazz. I listen to a lot of things, and Satchmo said, good music makes you tap your toes, and bad music, well, it's just there. It's noise, I guess. I want to thank Suzanne tonight for all of her hard work in the background and prior to the presentation. I can always count on her, and I tend to... when she isn't there, it's been a few minutes, so I won't give her another shot. I tend to miss her if she's not there, so hope she didn't go to sleep, or I put her to sleep. So let me send it back up to Suzanne for her final comments.
This is N1SUZ, and Jim, I wouldn't abandon you, and no, you did not put me to sleep. This has been a great net. You did a great job, Jim. And I just want to thank everybody who came aboard and participated, too. It's been great, and I want to thank you for inviting me to come down south with you.
Thanks, Susie. I appreciate it. I want to thank everyone, George and Pete and Rob for coming aboard, and Kathy also. And I probably left out somebody. I'm sorry. But thank you, everyone, for making this a very good net. And it is appreciated. We appreciate all of our members, our South Cars members. This is KJ4WKD with the South Cars VOIP TNT Open Forum, and we've been discussing all things Southern tonight. It's been a good net. I've enjoyed it, and I hope everyone connected has enjoyed and perhaps learned a few things about the South. Even I have learned a few things about the South. So with that, we'll endeavor to close the net. And this has been South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service, VOIP net. And our schedules and general information can be found at voip.southcars.com. That is our website. And your net control for this session has been... my name is Jim, and my call is KJ4WKD, and I've been joined in the co-pilot seat, really the pilot seat, probably, by N1SUZ, Susie. I'm in Greensboro, North Carolina, and Susie has been in Danbury, Connecticut. Thanks, everyone, for your participation. and we appreciate it as always. Thanks for everything everyone does for South Stars. So with that, the net is closed, and the servers, the repeaters are returned to regular amateur use. Good night, everyone. 73. Have a good evening. Have a great weekend. KJ4 WKD is clear.